This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. We are live at T-Mobile Park, site of a Mariners sweep over the Cincinnati Reds. They get it finished off today. We'll talk much about that game in an abbreviated show. We had a brief conversation with Mitch Haniger after the game down in the clubhouse. We'll have that for you coming up at 5:30 as well. So you can find us here. What else is that banging? Do we have a loose headset or something? Felt like there was a banging noise.
That's weird because I don't hear anything.
But yeah, beautiful day out here. Mariners win makes it even more beautiful as we watch the Seagulls come in and pick the stands clean. How about that? They don't even need people out here to clean the stands.
I'm going
to
throw Lefko's cookie out the window, see if one of the Seagulls will catch it.
I think he'll respond poorly to that.
Lefko's going to try to throw me out of the window. I don't think that's happening.
That'll be poorly received. You guys can text in 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. How's everybody feeling after a series sweep against a team that was rolling when they came in here? We'll see what the Reds ultimately end up becoming when the season's over. But this is a team that was rolling. This is one of the highest scoring teams in the National League coming in. They were the highest scoring team in their division outside of Milwaukee. They were one run behind Milwaukee, so they were rolling. You took out their best pitcher the first night, had an ERA of 2.16 coming into the game. Everything that had been going wrong for the Mariners prior to this series started to go right. I mean, they didn't pile up a ton of runs every game. You had the one blowout game where the offense really blew up. But pitching, 7 quality starts in a row, Dave. Today, 1 total hit, 1 walk between Bryce Miller and the bullpen. It was outstanding.
I think did they have 3 walks last night, I think?
In total, I think. I'll have to go back and look at the box.
Yeah, because they had 3 in a row without any. And then I think they went to 4 last night. And by the way, first of all, like Scott in his press conference, we were down there for it. He talked about how their offense, what you just said, Bob, their offense was rolling, man. They were you know, as far as their numbers, you know, they're only middle of the pack, but still they shut down a really good offense. And that was phenomenal. I mean, they only scored 5 runs their 3 games here. So, and I thought last night was maybe my favorite game. Last night, just because, you know, Julio with, you know, he slapped a couple of singles that went right past Ellie De La Cruz, and then he makes the amazing catch out there, and then he makes the throw out at third, which, by the way, Josh Rojas, who I would mention second, was just an amazing tag on that play. And then, you know, the other thing about Josh, he went 1-for-3 last night, but he was all over that play at the plate. Like he acts like a veteran. He's not really, I mean, this is his second year, right?
He's 30.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You're thinking of Canzone.
Yeah, I was thinking of Canzone. But no, I mean, Rojas is just such a pro. I mean, he really was like all over that. And he's just had, he's had a really kind of sneaky good season so far. So
yeah very, very good. You're right. I mean, he's outside of the first blip defensively where everybody seemed to have had a bit of a hitch going on with the defense. That's completely changed. I aged him a bit. He's 29. He'll be 30 in June.
Yeah.
So a couple months, he'll be 30.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just thinking he's new in the league just because last year he came here and, yeah, he played a little bit. But, I mean, that was part of the trade for Sewald. And, you know, he's just worked out. He's a very confident guy and, you know, just all over the game. I mean, he had earlier in the series, I think it was the first game, where Fraley kind of ran over the third base and he just left the tag on him. I mean, he's a very heads up player. So, you know, and then at the plate last night, he was kind of telling the official, no, he's safe. And, you know, the whole thing. So yeah, I really like what I saw out of him, but I thought that was a big night for Julio, you know, getting the throw out on Ellie De La Cruz at the third base there. And then, you know, just making plays out in the field, getting a couple hits. Julio is starting to come around.
Yeah, that was such an odd play because that's one where you look at it, just a heads-up play by Julio, catch the ball, field the ball, fire it to third, didn't even have his feet set.
Yeah.
Fired it to third. Great tag by Rojas, as you said, but that's a teaching moment for Fraley because he turned the Jets off. He didn't cross home in time. They should have scored the run.
Right.
And I'm sure David Bell probably after the game or somebody on that staff said, see what happens when you're not hustling? You got to bust it the entire time. You don't pull up. And that was just and kudos to the home plate ump in that game, last night's game, for, you know, being on top of it and seeing, you know, ultimately that the ball got loose and that, I'm talking about the other play where he saw he didn't score. He didn't cross the plate before Ellie De La Cruz was tagged out at third. So
yeah,
that was a big moment just on both sides. You know, teaching moment for the Reds and huge moment for Julio, had, as you said, two hits in that game, two hits today, two doubles. Still hasn't hit the home run, but I like that he was going the other way with the pitch. He's not trying to yank it. You still see him swing in the service in his postgame presser, sort of address that by saying, listen, Julio's an aggressive guy, and they're going to be those moments where you go, why are you swinging at that? And he goes, but that's who he is. He can do those things. He can get away with it. Sometimes he doesn't, but he's a guy, there's always going to be swing and miss in his game, essentially, because he is aggressive up there. He probably still is pushing a bit to try to get that first home run of the season, but I was just happy to see him make hard contact today and go the other way with the ball rather than trying to yank it and get the ball out of here.
Well, and I also like to think that Julio was like, everybody was talking about Ellie De La Cruz, and by everybody, I mean you and I.
Yeah. We represent everybody.
But no, I mean, he's one of those players that's must see, and I like to think that he's like, no, I'm the guy here, okay? Yeah. That throw he made to third, too, I think when he came up, he didn't know if he was going to go to third. I mean, I don't want to say it was last second, but it was like there was just a little tiny hitch, and then he's like, boom, I can get him at third. And that thing was just on a line, man. And, you know, great tag there. So, yeah, I'm happy for Julio. I feel like you can kind of, you know, breathe a sigh of relief a little bit just that he's gotten that done. And I feel like for major league ball players, they get to a point where, you know, it's like, come on, man, what am I doing here? And then something clicks like that. You know, we'll hear that from Mitch Haniger later, but, you know, for some guys it's gradual and it's like, okay, this is what I need to do. And for some guys, it's like the light bulb comes on. And I'm hoping that for Julio, it's like, hey, one game right there, that was my turnaround. And, you know, he can start to be the player that we all know that he is.
Yeah, and you know, listen, he did a nice job today. He was in the leadoff spot. They gave JP the day off, so he's hitting leadoff. He comes up with two more hits, so he's had four hits in the last two games. Defense has been great. Defense has been great for the entire team. Urias made a great play at third base.
Yeah.
You've just had everybody kind of taking turns making really solid defensive plays. So whatever, and we asked Mitch about that, and, you know, he can't speak to everybody else's struggles, but just as a team, we were just talking about how they just weren't playing clean baseball, and that has completely changed. That part of their game has completely flipped. The pitching was inconsistent to start the year. That is completely flipped against seven consecutive quality starts. Is it seven or eight now? Is it seven quality starts, eight-game hitting streak? Eight is the number I'm thinking of for Mitch Haniger, who's in the midst of an eight-game hitting streak, and he's, again, a guy that if he's healthy, you love what he brings to the table, man. He's a guy that can get it done. He got it done last night, came up with a hit today, drove in a run, scored a run. So, yeah, everybody, you know, is down as we were after that Cubs series, as bad as things felt. I'm hoping people are, even the most cynical of our listeners that text in and, same old Mariners, I hope they're enjoying it. Enjoy it when it happens because, as you know, 162 games, they're gonna find that valley again, then they're gonna find the peak, and right now it's trending the right way. You should feel good about this series.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, 17 runs, so that's a huge change for the offense, and that's something that everybody's been talking about. But the pitching too has just been solid all the way through. You look at what Logan has done and Bryce Miller today and the bullpen. You know, and we talk about no walks. I mean, that's, you know, that's part of it. It's not just the starters. So, and you know that. That's kind of, like I said earlier, this is the team that we expected. We expected, you know, good defense, which we saw some great defensive plays, especially last night. But then also, you know, you get your hitting going. So it's something I think that this could be a turning point. You know, we could look back and go, yeah, that's where everything kind of clicked. And we were down in the clubhouse today before the show, and there's just a totally different vibe. I mean, we were down there after the Guardian game, what, 2 weeks ago, or was that last week?
That's when Rojas pitched.
Yeah, and he was out there at the end. Yep, and right. Yeah, it's not good when your third baseman is out pitching. Just a note there. But, yeah, that totally felt different. down there. There's a different vibe. So, but you know what? The thing is with baseball players, they're not going to go too crazy one way or the other. You listen to the vets, like when we talk to Mitch Haniger, it's like, you know, yeah, he's got an 8-game hitting streak. He's vaguely aware of that, right? I mean, he
almost seemed like he didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I thought, uh-oh, did I bring something up there? But yeah, a lot of veteran guys down there to lead these young guys, and you know, not get too high, not get too low. And these are the times you just have to, you know, the previous 6 or 7 games where you just have to grind through and try to find a way out, and they did.
Yep, it's there's a lot to feel good about coming out of this series sweep, first series win, first sweep of the season against a team that was rolling. So much to discuss. Again, we'll have our conversation with Mitch Haniger coming up at 5:30. Meanwhile, the Mariners pitching, as we've talked about, has been impressive. We'll take a deeper look at some of those numbers that they've put up recently. That is coming up next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We are live at T-Mobile Park, site of the Mariners sweep of the Cincinnati Reds. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Coming up at 5:30, our conversation with Mitch Haniger. Had a chance to speak to him for a few minutes after the big win today, which was great to see. Great to see the offense putting up some runs in this series. But this pitching, Dave, has really been what's carried them the past few years. And they're starting to do it once again while this offense kind of finds their footing, so to speak. But today, 7th straight quality start. And again, for those that we will often get the text, what's a quality start? 6 innings, at least 6 innings by your starter, giving up 3 runs or less. Quality start. So that's 7 in a row. 7 games in a row. In that time, this staff has a 1.83 ERA in 44 and two-thirds innings pitched, giving up 9 earned runs, 44 strikeouts, and 6 walks. 6 total walks in 7 games.
That is unbelievable. I can't even believe that is a real stat. I was like, surely you must mean the last 2 games.
Well, they went 3 with no walks.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, and look, that's where they've been. And I thought, you know, early on, that was maybe the more disappointing thing. I mean, I thought hitting would take a while to come around. And, you know, our pitching will, you know, let us allow the team to hang in there. And not really. Didn't really happen. So yeah, that was pretty amazing to really be able to believe in what the pitching staff is doing. And it's, you know, we've kind of gone up and down a little bit, but for the most part, if you look at the entire thing, and especially these last 7, it's just been incredible and just ridiculous numbers, especially the walks is just a phenomenal stat to me.
Yeah. It's, and just looking at, you know, a couple of the guys that have really stood out. I mean, Bryce Miller has been fantastic. 4 starts so far this year, a 1.85 ERA, 0.82 whip. Opponents have a 4.99 OPS against. You look at Logan Gilbert, 4 starts, 2.33, 1 run allowed in 3 of his 4 starts. How about that? And a 0.78 whip. I mean, Gilbert, we talked at the beginning of the season, just sort of speculate, all right, who are going to be the all-stars from this team? And we essentially had the same people, I think we named, and one of the guys we had in common was Logan Gilbert.
Right.
I felt like as far as pitchers being represented by this team, I thought it would be Kirby, and I thought it would be Logan Gilbert. Logan is making good on that. It could be Bryce Miller. Who knows? But, you know, Kirby, a better outing last time. Castillo, a better outing last time. Still waiting for the ace-level performance from Castillo, but he kept him in the game, got off to a rocky start, pitched well after that, ended up striking out 9. Kirby much better in his last one, not his typical dominant performance, but much more like the Kirby we're used to seeing. And then Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller, fantastic.
Bryce Miller, what a pleasant surprise, because when we talked about it, we're like, okay, they have 3/5 of a starting rotation that we trust. you know, and Logan was maybe a little bit, I don't think he's really blown up like nationally, but Kirby, a lot of people talking about, you know, and of course, Luis Castillo, when I'm watching MLB Network, they were talking about the top 20 pitches and those two guys were in there. Logan Gilbert wasn't. And I feel like this can be kind of the breakout year for Logan Gilbert. But Bryce Miller is one of the two, him and Wu, where we were like, yeah, these guys, we don't really know. I mean, it could have been just a flash in the pan. We don't know how solid he's going to be. And Bryce Miller has been phenomenal. So what a great surprise there.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, what he's done in developing that splitter is remedied his issues with lefties, at least to this point. He's done very well against lefties. Hopefully that continues. We'll see. That was also an issue for Wu. We haven't had a chance to see, obviously, how he's going to combat that when he gets back into the rotation. We'll see. But, yeah, and hopefully, you know, listen, you want Hancock to get out there and do what he's done, give you a chance to win. I don't expect him to lock a team down. Maybe he will, the Rockies, because, frankly, the Rockies are just not a very good team. But we'll see what he does. But he's done it, you know, for the most part, he had one dud. The others, he's done his job. He's gone 5+, giving you a chance to win. Hopefully he can do that while this offense looks like they're finding their footing. And it's great to see. It's fun to see. Class A didn't have a hit today, but just good to see him out in the field. He worked a walk out there.
Did he score a run?
He scored a run. Yeah, he worked a walk and ended up scoring. He stole a base. You know, we've seen him do that. We've seen him drive in a run. So it's you know, his first stolen base of his career. We saw his first hit, his first RBI, and just Scott had that line in the postgame presser talking about he doesn't know what it's like to lose at the big league level because he's only been here since the Red Series started, and they're 3-0 in his time here. So pretty cool to see him be involved and chipping in to what hopefully will be the turnaround for this team.
Yeah, I don't, you know, let's see. We'll see how long he can sustain it. I mean, he's, you know, like you said, a couple RBIs. You know, he's fast. He seems like, you know, he still looks like a little kid out there running around. But, man, I there's been really nothing different. And I really like what, you know, what Scott did, because I was listening on the way in, and Goldie was talking about that Scott, I think he went and looked, okay, who's the youngest when they made their big league debut? And it was Polanco. So he had Polanco go and talk to him. And, you know, and not only did that really help Class A, but I think it helps Polanco too, you know, just to kind of realize, put everything in perspective. And, you know, and so he had a nice conversation with him. And I thought that was a great move by Scott. And, yeah, it seems to have paid off.
Yeah, some of the big moments from the offense today. Everything got started with this shot here. Solo shot from Cal Raleigh to tie the game at 1 in the bottom of the second.
Next offer to Cal. Swing and a drive deep to left field. We are tied at 1-1. This one, above Edgar's Cantina, above the hand-operated scoreboard, right underneath the Edgar's sign down the left field line. Cal Raleigh with a blast to left. His third home run of the season, and it's now the Mariners 1 and the Reds 1, and what a blast off the bat of Cal Raleigh.
And he did it from the right side of the plate. He's hitting right-handed, which is a rarity for him. So majority of his home runs since he's been in the big leagues coming from him hitting left-handed. So that ties things up, and then we saw this guy in the postgame presser. He went up and spoke, and that's Mitch Garver, a guy that – He's known to hit home runs. That's what you brought him in here for, is to do damage. And he did it with the Rangers. We've seen him do it. It hasn't happened to this point before the game today. And then today he finally gets off the schneid and gives the team the lead with his first home run of the season.
The 0-1 pitch to Garver. Swing and it's clubbed. High out to left field. Number one is sailing high and deep and gone for Mitch Garver. Out to Edgar's porch in left field. Garver's first home run as a Mariner has put the M's in front. It's 2-1 in the bottom of the sixth.
Edgar's getting some work out there on those first two shots. A lot of activity going on out there, but that was cool to see. And you know, he talked, Dave, in the postgame presser when we were down there, and he talked about chasing off the plate in a way that he doesn't normally do. He talked about chasing. Yeah, he might chase up and down, but typically when it's off the plate, things he's been swinging at, that's not who he is. That's not his game. And I got to believe anyway that that's hey, I'm the new guy here. They brought me in here. There's expectations. Here's what I did before. That's what I need to do here. I want to, you know, prove that they made the right move by bringing me here. I want to be the guy that contributes or helps get this offense fired up. And you could just see, I think anybody in that position, any of the new guys would be feeling like, man, I just want to prove that you guys made the right call by bringing me here, and maybe a little too much pressure they're putting on themselves.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's really interesting because, you know, a lot of times you talk about when you go somewhere new, you got a clean slate and everything. But once you get there, you like want to prove to everybody, hey, you made the right move. Guys can, you know, follow me and I'll be a leader and all that. And he just wasn't getting the results. So yeah, it was kind of interesting listening to him talk about it. He was very humble about it. And hopefully that is the start of something good to happen here. But yeah, I think there is that pressure on guys like that, you know, that come in new. You want to do your part. And it looks like he's starting to get to that.
And there's probably also a small part of you that wants to show your former team, you know, you messed up by whether they let you go as a free agent or they traded you, however you left your former spot. You kind of want to show them too, right? Like you guys are going to regret this. You're going to wish I was still on your team.
You know, my first year in Denver, I got, I think I got two or three game balls. Mm-hmm. Two of them were against the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, and I remember Wade Phillip goes, you can play good against other teams too, you know.
It's like, there's a Wade, backhanded compliment.
I'm trying, Wade. No, but I had particularly good games, and I don't know if it's just because of the familiarity or what, but no, that is something definitely. There was a little bit extra. Now, you know, you're supposed to say, you know, every game's important, but they're just not. I mean, look, I don't. Every guy is going to say that, and you know, it's the right thing to say. I approach every team the same, but there's a little bit of extra. So, yeah, I think that definitely exists in every competitor, which is, you know, what we're talking about here. These guys are competitors, man. They're out there to try to crush their opponent.
Well, and one of the guys we talked about earlier, Josh Rojas, is not playing every day. You know, there's still a bit of a platoon situation going on at third with him and Arias. But we talked about his average has been, he's hitting for a great average so far this year. Hasn't done a ton of damage, except for today. He did a little damage in giving them a 3-1 lead.
The pitch, Rojas swings and it's a high towering fly ball. Out to right field. This has enough on it. It's a pinch hit home run. Josh Rojas, a home run out to right field. It's a 3-1 Mariners lead. Wasted no time on the first pitch.
I was going to ask, was that the first pitch?
Yeah, first pitch. Jumped on it.
I was like, really? Did I just see that? That was incredible. But I was so excited for him. After last night, I just thought that was... He had a really good game last night, and in a lot of different ways, you know, just as far as being a leader, as being a guy who, you know, really knows the game, everybody else can kind of follow, and just the way he goes about playing in the field and just his understanding of the game and everything. I thought it was great. And I love hunting the first pitch. That's, to me, that's an awesome way to get a home run. Love seeing that. And, you know, we love him because he's such a – well, he's also a really good ball player, but also, you know, he's been a great interview and a really good pickup. And also, you know, I'm always going to be keeping my eye on guys that were traded, and especially, you know, when there's a trade that, especially when the fans aren't super happy about it. Nobody was very happy about the trade last year.
Players weren't. No, fans weren't. Yeah. So it certainly helps wash that taste out of your mouth. Yeah. If you felt like, man, we got the short end of that. Seawald goes on to win a World Series with his team out there. So yeah, that's you feel a little different about things at that point. And now you look now, Seawald starts the season hurt. Josh Rojas has had the best average on the team, even though he hasn't played as many games as everybody else, but he's contributing. It's just good to see. It's such a different feeling coming out of a series like this, especially when it was so turned the other way, where you're just feeling so down about, oh, they can't hit. They, you know, 1-for-15 with runners in scoring position, these two games combined. And, you know, you go through all the numbers that aren't good. And to see them find a way and do it in a way that they've done it previously with their pitching being dominant and the offense chipping in and having a big game, certainly in this series. But just guys looking like, all right, starting to relax, starting to find it a bit, and hopefully we're going to see some consistency as far as the offense goes. I've never really doubted the pitching. You knew they were going to bounce back. They're too good. They're too deep. They didn't forget how to pitch, and that's the same for a lot of the hitters. They didn't forget how to hit. They're gonna find their comfort zone, and you know we'll see truly what this team is made of. But they're starting to give you a glimpse, which is good to see. Jeff passing on with Brock and Salk, and talking about a few different things, and probably the biggest topic in baseball has been the injuries to pitchers. And is it the pitch clock? Is it velocity? Is it a combination of, you know, all those things? And he talks here about, you know, baseball needs to move away from the importance of velocity, which I think is going to be a really hard move. But he said if they want to save pitchers' arms, that's the move that needs to be made.
I'm not just suggesting it's a possibility, Mike. I'm suggesting it's a necessity.
That they need to limit the, you know, the number, limit the velocity, essentially?
I don't think they need to limit the velocity. I think they need to incentivize pitchers away from it.
Okay.
If guys who throw a lot of innings start getting paid more than guys who throw really hard. But the problem with that is that, generally speaking, guys who throw a lot of innings may not be as effective as guys who throw really hard. And that's the catch-22 of all of this, that velocity works.
Yeah, I listened to a big round table of people on the Major League Baseball Network, and they were talking about ways to get around all these injuries. And I think there was a little bit of an overreaction, including me, the one week where Shane Bieber goes down. And there was like four guys that were out that were, you know, recognizable names that are out for the year. And then there was another two that were, you know, out for a month or something like that. So they're trying to, you know, talk like, how do we solve this problem?
Right.
Well, and one of them was like, well, how about penalizing for velo or spin or something like that? I mean, he was just throwing out anything because it's like, what do we do? I mean, people are always going to want to throw faster and faster. And now isn't the top speed, I think, in Major League Baseball, isn't it like 105?
I think somebody hit that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like one pitch I'm talking about.
Right.
But I mean,
that's obviously an outlier, but right. Guys hitting triple digits is becoming more and more and more common. So it's usually your guys out of the bullpen that are hitting triple digits, but it's becoming so much less of a rarity where it was like Aroldis Chapman, and that was kind of it. You know, he's hitting 102.
And how long ago was that when Chapman came
on? When he first did it, it's been a few years. I mean, he's been that guy for a while, but he was kind of the outlier hitting 102, 103. Other guys are touching 100, maybe 101, but it just – yeah, I don't know how you – I understand what he's saying, but when you're talking about what is the most impactful way to pitch, if I'm a pitcher, what is my most certain way of getting this guy out? You're not going to get him off of velocity if that's what they do. You know, if you're gonna say, well, I'm going to incentivize a guy who can pitch more innings and maybe he takes a little velocity off, is he going to be as effective or is he going to get knocked around for a couple of innings? I mean, it's – you know, not everybody can be – Jamie Moyer and Marco Gonzalez, guys who can be effective by barely touching 90. And in the case of Moyer, he was sitting around 88 with his fastball. So, you know, those guys are rare that do that. And I don't know that you're going to get anybody who's had success and got to the big leagues because they've got that rocket arm to all of a sudden think of it differently and say, all right, I need to work in more changeups. I need to be more of an off-speed pitcher or have, you know, move away from what's gotten me to this point.
Well, and then isn't some of those things, I mean, it's an incredible amount of torque on your elbow either way, whether you're throwing, you know, spin or you're, you know, throwing velo. And, you know, I just don't know how you – the one thing is, though, not every guy gets hurt, right? I mean, most do, but it's not like everyone does. I mean, some people are built better than others. You know, it's all about the, you know, the attachment of where the ligaments and things are. And that's why some guys are stronger than others. And it just, you know, so it's not happening to everyone, but there was kind of a panic. I felt like league wide, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago when all these, you know, Shane Bieber was a really good pitcher, man. He was headed for, you know, being a Cy Young candidate and he's gone.
Well, yeah. I mean, somebody like Lucas Giolito didn't even start the season. He was done. You had Garrett Cole hurt to start the season. You had Justin Verlander hurt to start the season. I mean, it's just It's not new though. Is the thing. It felt like it was all at once, and it's got to be the pitch clock because now people are getting hurt. Well, no, it's not just now. If you look at the numbers that were put out there, it's been trending this way for a while. We talked about Passan himself. He wrote his book. What is it called? The Arm.
The Arm. Yeah.
He's got a chapter in there specifically on the rise of injuries, and that's 2016 that he wrote that book. So I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon based on the pitch clock, which I felt like became everybody's fallback excuse. Well, that these guys don't have those extra 2 seconds to rest or those extra 5 seconds or whatever they used to take before. I'm sure maybe it does contribute. I'm not eliminating that as a possibility, but to draw the hard and fast conclusion, well, here are the injuries. That's what changed. So that's what caused it. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, these injuries were happening before.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that, you know, just to be on the positive side, the surgical procedures have gotten way better, right? I mean, it's almost like it's better to have had Tommy John surgery, right? And then, you know, the other thing that I'm hoping will catch up is just the training, you know, like with the trainers and the treatment and things like that. I mean, we heard the story from the guy back from the Armory, Mike, I think
Florida,
that was working with Logan Gilbert. And Logan, when he was, 17 years old, was like he could only throw once a week or once every 10 days. And which is such a credit to Logan and his character. He was like, I don't feel right about signing a scholarship, you know, and I'm not going to be available all the time. So anyway, they fixed him, you know, they got him in different exercises and things like that. So maybe that's something that will develop, and, you know, and I think we're kind of not accounting for that part of it. I think the doctors, the trainers, and the weight coaches are going to, you know, find ways. Cause I mean, you know, look at like Driveline. I mean, what a great advertisement that a guy like Ty France comes in there and JP comes in there. And if you get some kind of a trainer that finds like the, I don't want to say it's the magic bullet, but something that helps.
Yeah.
Every pitcher in the world's going to be going there, including, you know, kids from, and I think Passan has a son that's just like high school age. And he was talking about how these kids are getting to 90, you know, coming out of high school, you know? So I feel like That's to be positive, because it does seem like doom and gloom. Like you're just going to outthrow what your body's made for. It's just a matter of time until you get hurt. I think on the positive side, like I said, the trainers, the surgery, the different methods and techniques and all that stuff, hopefully we'll kind of catch up to these pitchers and this ridiculous velocity.
All right, coming up, he's on an 8-game hit streak right now. We're going to catch up with the red-hot Mitch Haniger. That conversation coming your way next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Mariners complete the sweep of the Cincinnati Reds today here at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. And a couple of guys in that lineup starting to find it. You had two doubles today from Julio Rodriguez, Mitch Garver with his first home run of the season, Josh Rojas coming in with a pinch hit home run. So guys are starting to find it offensively. And a guy who I think he's kind of been there since the beginning. He's been just kind of steady. He's done what you hoped he would do when he's healthy, and that's Mitch Haniger, who extended his hitting streak to 8 games today. So he's in the midst of an 8-game hitting streak. He'll take that into Colorado. And we had a chance to catch up with him in the clubhouse after the game and talk to him about what a series sweep like this means for a team that's been struggling prior to the arrival of the Reds.
3-game winning streak, considering how things ended with the Cubs series, just how the season's been frustrating. How big is that just for the clubhouse and the mood and just maybe taking the weight off everybody's shoulders?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've done a good job just keeping our heads, you know, high and not really worrying about the slow start. And, I mean, anytime you sweep a team, it's tough to sweep anybody in this league, so it's always a plus.
Mitch, 8-game hitting streak. What does that feel like? Do you pay any attention to that kind of thing, or is it just you feel good? Are you looking at stats? It was the first thing that popped up today when on Major League Baseball Network when they showed the matchup.
Yeah, I try not to look at any of that stuff. I don't care what I'm hitting, all that stuff. I just focus on what I can control, swing good pitches, hit the ball hard, and try to do that on a nightly basis, and hopefully good things happen.
Heard Blowers on the broadcast said he talked to you, and he asked how you were feeling, like, are you there yet? And you're like, I'm not quite there yet. What's missing? Because it looks to the naked eye like you're dialed in. What do you feel? Do you feel like your timing's not there, or what's keeping you from saying, yeah, I'm right where I need to be?
No, I feel good, but I just feel like as a hitter in this league, like, there's probably majority of the season you're just kind of how I'm feeling now, and then you hope for these hot streaks where you feel incredible. You know, unfortunately, you don't feel that way, you know, the entire season, but I feel good. Yeah, I feel good in the box. I feel ready to go. So overall, I feel good.
When something comes to you that's good, that you want to hang on to, does it come suddenly, or is it something that you gradually get to a point or realize as the season goes on?
I think it happened both ways. So, yeah, sometimes it's just all of a sudden something clicks. Sometimes it's something you're working on, and it doesn't show up the first couple games, and then all of a sudden starts bleeding into the game from your work. So, yeah, I think it's different every time.
At the beginning of the year, the defense was struggling. Everything was kind of struggling, but the defense wasn't happening, and now it's been clean baseball. How do you rectify that? Is that just, hey, we got to focus, everybody's just more zeroed in, or what changes that defense?
I can't speak to it. I'm not too sure. I just know from a standpoint of guys coming in every day working, trying to get better, and having attention to detail. I've been really pleased with how guys show up in the clubhouse, show up on the field for early work. We've been doing a really good job, and early on in the season our results weren't showing, but I'm happy with how guys have been going out their business.
When guys like Class A come in, do you go up to them, or do you just wait for them to come to you? Or I heard Polanco, Scott got Polanco to talk to him, but for the young guys, you can relate to that feeling, right?
Yeah. You got to go up to them and welcome them with open arms, and, you know, congratulate him for being here, and then tell him, like, we're trying to win some games, so let's go. And, yeah, he's been a good force for us in the bottom of the lineup, and a fun player with a lot of tools.
When we heard Garver talking earlier, hit his first home run of the season, and he said he'd been chasing off the plate in a way he doesn't normally chase. And I'm wondering if that's up and down the lineup, guys were struggling. Is that everybody feeling like, I got to help get us out of this slump? I got to be the guy to get the fire started, so to speak. Do you think that's just pressing?
Yeah, sometimes it can be that way. And, you know, I feel like early on runs have been limited for us, so you sometimes you feel a bit more pressure, but at the end of the day, I think everybody just needs to take it individually and just focus on what they can do to help the lineup, and, you know, all that revolves around, you know, swinging good pitches and hitting the ball hard. And you know, this week we were able to do that really well against Cincinnati and drive up a lot of pitch counts on the starters and get in the bullpen. And yeah, I thought our bats were really good the last couple days.
Who's a player on this team that's surprised you, since you're kind of the veteran on the team? Is there somebody that you didn't think was necessarily going to be as good as they are, or surprise on the upside?
No, I wouldn't say that. There's no big surprises for me, but just getting to know, you know, in spring training, you don't always play on the same days as some other guys. So I would say guys in the bullpen have just been really good. I get to see them obviously now play every day. You know, in spring training, sometimes you don't match up with playing on the same day that guys are thrown out of the bullpen. So just a lot of guys in the back end of the bullpen. I mean, I know Sandy and Munoz, but some of the other guys, like, I didn't see Gabe throw a lot. I didn't see Austin Voth throw a lot. I didn't see Thorny throw a lot, and they've been great for us.
For you, you go back and forth between playing in the field, DH. Is it, some people hate DH. It's hard for them to stay involved in the game. How do you feel when on the days you're DHing?
That's great. I love it. I'm happy playing either one, so I enjoy both.
You feel the difference in your body the next day when you don't play in the field?
Definitely. Sometimes, yeah. It depends how busy it is in the outfield, but yeah.
What are your workouts like during the season when you get into it and get into a routine?
I just try to work out almost every day. Some days lift my body and just take it lighter, but for the most part, doing strength work every day, a lot of mobility stuff, a lot of stability stuff, and you know, that department does a great job with high performance, do a great job with us, like, being sure, get us ready to play. So it's been fun to work with them.
There you go. There's Mitch Haniger after the game today, extending his hitting streak to 8 games and looks to be in fantastic shape. He's gotten some time off of his feet. He's DH'd a few games so far early in the season. We'll see how that goes throughout the rest of the year. But
sounds like he loves DH'ing.
Yeah, doesn't mind. There are some guys that really, over the years, you've heard him talk about how they have a harder time just staying mentally checked into the game. When
Nelson Cruz?
Nelson, he certainly found a way around it. If he wanted to play in the field, he just was not a great fielder.
But he wasn't great.
He certainly found a way to adjust to the role of being a DH.
I think it's funny, though, that he did want to play defense.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and get into a rhythm. But, yeah, I mean, I guess I never saw him. The only thing you did, I mean, you can't automatically, you know, pick up range, especially if you're watching a game on television necessarily. So, but, yeah, I mean, he was decent. He was pretty good. But
Nelson?
In the right field. I mean, I never saw him make terrible mistakes or anything, but like I said, there's lots of balls that other guys can get to that he can't, I think, was the thing with him. But what did you figure out that thing was by Mitch's locker?
Oh, it was Mitch had a contraption in his locker that looked like a giant sundial with a resistance band attached to it. It had numbers like a clock.
As soon as I saw that, I looked up to see if Logan's name was.
It looked like
that.
You're right. Looked exactly like something Logan would have. Like, what kind of goofy contraption is this? Yeah. It had handles on it, and we're all looking at it. And Luke Grayley was there, and I was like, "Hey, do you know what that is?" He goes, "I have no idea." And he stared. We're both sitting there looking at it. He goes, "I think maybe it's got something to do. I mean, I see handles." He's like trying to piece it together, and he actually nailed it. He goes, "Maybe it's something for to loosen up your hips or something." And then when Mitch came over, I asked him what it was, and he said, "Yeah, I guess you stand on it." And I didn't really understand how it worked. You'd have to see it to do it justice. For those that are listening, they probably have no idea. But it almost looked homemade on some level. It almost looked like just the way it was put together and the numbers painted on it. It didn't look like a fancy, you know, high-end contraption or anything.
Where do you think Logan gets the stuff that he has?
I don't know.
You talk about homemade. That looks like it's homemade. You said there was something about an oven mitt.
Yeah, he had the sleeve. He called it, I think it was like a sleeve, but it was like an oversized, looks like a giant oven mitt that he's got on his arm that he's talked about a few times with us. And I don't know, maybe it was made by the same group of scientists that made the Trident. So I don't know. We'll check in with the Red Sox beat reporters there and see if they've got any idea. A bunch of whining simps.
I love when Bob hears something and he's on it like a dog on a bone. We're not, because it did come off very weird. So what you're referring to was that yesterday or 2 days ago where you're talking, the guys were criticizing the Trident, which the Trident is awesome.
Yeah, it was the play-by-play guys for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And they were criticizing the home run celebrations for teams in general. You know, some we've talked to, and I can't remember who they were playing, but
I take it the Red Sox don't have one.
I guess not. I don't know. Or unless they just think, well, ours is cool, but everybody else's is lame. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, then they brought up the Trident and talked about how the some scientists created it. I'm like, it looks like something that would have been around in the caveman days. What are you talking about? Scientists got together with it.
Yeah, there was no laboratory involved.
So silly. By the way, our Mariners Spotlight is presented by Muckleshoot Casino and by Pacific Lamp and Supply. Good to catch up with Mitch Haniger and really, really just good to see him having success out of the gate. I think a lot of fans were happy just to see him back, but there was that feeling of, okay, is he going to be able to stay healthy? Things did not go well in San Francisco in terms of health. He played 61 games, so it didn't go his way, but so far so good with Mitch Haniger. So good to catch up with him. Coming up, we had to make sure to get this in today. What's bugging Bob, Matt, Mike, Dave? We're going to find out next. It's Wyman and Bob live from T-Mobile Park, Seattle Sports on 710.
What's bugging Bob?
It could be traffic.
Hey.
It might be Angels fans.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
And it's definitely Stephen A. Smith.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
It's time to find out what's bugging Bob.
What's bugging Bob? Presented by Issaquah Pest Control. Hard to have anything bothering you on a day like this. Beautiful day. A little chilly, but sun is out. Mariners swept the Cincinnati Reds. Day off tomorrow, and they take to the road.
I got one that he's kind of an old man, but so am I. So, you know, I don't want to criticize too much, but I followed an old man today. He wasn't that old. So we're going into the gas station. You know, you pull up to the gas station to get gas in your car parallel to the, you know, where the gas pumps are.
Right.
He noses in. Like perpendicular.
Yeah, so the tail is sticking out.
It's way out there. So, and he's parked like that. So I go inside to get something, and he's up at the checkout counter, and he's got every like business card or some kind of discount card or credit card that he's ever had in his life. There's like 18 of them out, and he's like shuffling through them and looking. So it's taken a long time. Then I go outside and I get in my car, and he is trying to stretch the hose over to where his gas
and the tail sticking out
tank is, and it's sticking out. And another guy goes by and he looks at me and just is laughing and shaking his head. And I'm like, I don't know what he's doing. So I just roll down the window. I go, that looks like maybe you need to get a little closer there, huh? And he's like, yeah, looks like it. But after he had tried like three times to stretch it over, and I'm like, you can see that the hose is at its maximum length. Yeah, it
doesn't get any longer.
It's not going to get longer. Maybe he thought it was going to pull out of there. So I guess I wasn't like terribly annoyed, but yeah, that was one I think I thought it was very interesting. Like, at what point? I mean, how many times have you filled up your gas tank?
Maybe he was in a hurry. He thought, I'm close enough. I'll run in there. And
no, look, it wasn't even close.
He's an old guy. What if you found out he was younger than you?
Well, then I'd give him a hard time. What's the matter with you, you idiot? No.
Can't you see the distance between the pump and your gas tank? Come on, man.
But it's just so fundamental that, like, you pull up to the gap where the gasoline comes out of the hose.
Yeah, yeah.
You pull right up to it parallel, and that didn't happen for him. So that was I just thought that was kind of interesting. I'd never seen that before.
I've seen a lot of people that will realize that their gas cap is on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen them try to stretch the hose over the top of the car. Right. And sometimes it works, and other times you see them doing the same thing where I'm just like, it's not going to grow. It's not going to get longer.
Well, usually, like, when you get a rental, that's a problem. But typically, they have a little arrow on the gas gauge, right, that points which side. And, yeah, so, yeah, that's, I thought that was, like, I've never seen that before.
What about you, Matt?
Well, first of all, I'm annoyed that I got jumped in line by Dave.
I know, Dave just over.
Yeah, why do you get to go first? I don't.
We made it
a tradition.
It's
called What's Bugging Bob, by the way.
But Matt's so good at it.
Yeah, but I complain the most. Why would you take away the one quantifiable contribution I give to the show?
You've earned it. You've earned it.
He's great at. He's a gold medalist in complaining. He's. Yeah.
All right, Matt. Go ahead.
It is what I do best.
Yeah. What,
I think
what's
my
got
complaint,
you today?
My complaint is probably the same as Bob's complaint, in that Curb Your Enthusiasm is over. The series finale aired. I think we're all in a period of mourning right now.
Yes, I mean, 100%.
But the one part of it that I am kind of happy about is that after episode one of this season, I predicted exactly where the finale was going to go. And I felt very smart in doing that.
Did he? Bob, you witness?
Oh, he said it to me. Yeah.
He nailed it.
Yeah.
Bob can back me up here.
Yeah, 100%.
I had it from the jump.
And right out of the gate after the first, or I can't remember if it was the first or second episode, but he laid it out how he thought it was going to end, and it ended exactly as he said.
So basically, Matt has the same mind as Larry David.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm just as smart. I'm just as talented. I'm just as funny as Larry David.
Yeah, nobody's realized it yet. Dang.
It's a real shame. But I was pretty happy.
I
got to
get on that, man. When are you going to start to really bother me and complain about it that I haven't watched Curb?
Well, pretty soon we're just going to tell you what happened. Because Matt and I have tried to have our discussions quietly. If you're like in the next room, like, all right, let's not spoil it for Dave. And we're reliving the funny moments of the episode or the last couple of episodes. And, there's always somebody like Dave who says, I haven't watched it yet. It's like,
I like to go in fresh.
There's got to be a time limit where there's no more spoiler alert, where it's just, hey, tough luck. You haven't watched it. Here's what happened.
That was Frank Costanza, right?
Yeah.
Hey, haven't seen it. I like to go in fresh. Do you have to go to a crazy app to get a third party to get on it? Is it HBO Max? Is it Apple?
It's on HBO. They're running it incessantly on HBO right now.
Yeah.
It's probably on right this minute.
You think that's part of my package?
I think it is. Okay. If you've got HBO, it is running right now. You've got every opportunity to see it.
I'd rather hear Bob speculate as to whether or not I have HBO Max than me try to go and find it.
Yeah, yeah. It's on the regular. You don't have to go to the app. You don't have to go to the Max app. You can just go home, go to channel 549, and it's going to be on there at some point tonight. I almost guarantee it. How about that? Matt, wasn't there a texter who took a shot at you over guessing the ending?
I think they were just asking, like, what my theory was.
Oh, I thought somebody had ripped you for... I can't remember. Something about the finale in you.
I could see a texter making fun of me. It happens fairly regularly. It wouldn't shock me if that happened.
They wouldn't be able to do it on that, though, because you nailed it. I mean, how can they rip you for that?
I got it right. I got something right. I was proud of myself.
And I will say this, that they got it right. I think Larry David and everybody involved, this season I thought was awesome.
It was a great season, and the way they wrapped up the whole show, it really made me happy. It's hard to wrap up a show like that, just like it was with Seinfeld, but I think they absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, they did. So anybody who's like Dave, who has yet to see it, enjoy, because pretty soon, and I would enjoy it soon, because pretty soon Matt and I are just going to unload every aspect of every episode on the air. So we're going to spoil every one of them for you. How about that?
What, how many seasons is that for them, Kurt?
Was this 10, 12?
I think it was 12.
Was it 12? Yeah. I mean, they've had big gaps. They didn't have a regular schedule. If you like, every year was a new season. They had some big gaps there, but yeah, I think 12 seasons.
Matt, I think Dune 2 is now on television. We can get it like on our, I think you can purchase it now.
Oh, it's streaming?
Yeah.
Well, I watched it in theaters, so I don't have to do that.
Oh, that's right.
I watched it the way I was supposed to watch it.
Yeah. I missed that.
Well, we can't go to Lefko for his complaints. He's got no microphone today, which I'm guessing some listeners are going, all right.
The thing that's bugging Lefko is that he can't tell us what's bugging him.
Yeah, he could yell from, you might hear him in the background. It'll get picked up by Dave's mic or my mic, but yeah.
The cookies weren't chewy enough. Yeah,
the free Something cookies weren't chewy enough. Yeah. he's dissatisfied with the free cookie he got.
All right, that does it for us. I appreciate everybody tuning in. If you missed anything from today's show or any day, all you need to do is head to seattlesports.com, click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture and click on that, and it'll be right there waiting for you. And as Dave and Lefko tell you every time, click subscribe. That way it's downloaded automatically for you. You never have to go through that process again. Either way, we appreciate you tuning in. We're back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.